Today, on the exam room.
Are we seriously insinuating that the heavily processed cereal with the added dyes and the sugar and just refined to death and refined some more after that is better for you than that chicken breast?
By far.
Welcome to the Exam Room Podcast, brought to you by the Physicians Committee. Hi, I'm the weight loss champion, Chuck Carroll, raising health IQs coast to coast and around the world. Hi to the Exam Roomies listening in Madison, Wisconsin, Rancho Cucamonga, California, and Dubai, UAE. Wherever you are, we appreciate you helping to make the world a healthier place. This is episode 14 of season 8, number 613 overall. And this is also everything you need to know about processed food. Which ones are healthy and which ones are bad for you? We are going to find out today with leading nutrition researcher and author, Dr. Neil Barnard, as he joins us here on the Exam Room Podcast. And this conversation actually took place on the Exam Room Live. So here's what we're covering. Number one, what is a processed food? Well, Dr. Barnard is going to explore the difference between a processed food and an ultra-processed food. Different things there. Also, the health factors. We're going to highlight that while processed foods are often associated with diseases like diabetes and heart disease, not all processed foods are equally harmful. Plus, the immune system. Dr. Barnard's going to take us inside there and let us know whether a heavily processed diet can actually suppress your immune system and make you more vulnerable to becoming sick. And then life expectancy. What happens on these ultra-processed diets? Does that actually shave years off of your life? We're going to find out. And then we're going to be talking about sodium and dairy and the dangers of added sodium in processed foods. And dairy plays a very big role here as well. Plus, we're going to get some practical tips from Dr. Barnard, who's going to incorporate healthier foods into your diet in a very easy way. And then after our conversation today, I'm going to have details on a new study just in time for the big game. Yeah, the Super Bowl is big time for commercials, but the commercial's effect may not be so super for your health. So details on what you can expect and the toll they can take on your health coming right up. But first, let's go ahead and dive into processed foods and go inside the mind of the author of The Power Foods Diet. Here's a conversation with Dr. Neil Barnard from the Exam Room Live.
Thanks for being here.
Great to be here, Chuck.
All right. So first of all, let's define what a processed food actually is. I think that a lot of people are thinking that, well, a processed food, well, that's got to be something like Wonder Bread or something like that. But then you have this group that'll say, well, maybe even something like a Lara bar, which is nothing more than dates and nuts. You know, that is an ultra processed food. We don't seem to have a consensus definition about what a processed food actually is.
Right.
What is your definition?
People have tried to come up with definitions, and a group in Brazil came up with probably the ones that are lasting the most. And it does have to do with a fundamental alteration of a food along with adding things. So an alteration means that you're taking a grain and you're grinding it up, or you're pulling the fiber out of it, but you're also adding something. You're adding sugar, you're adding salt, you're adding colorings, you're adding flavorings. And if there is less and less of the original product remaining, then that's going to be a more heavily processed food.
All right.
Now, that's not an entirely satisfactory definition, but that's what people have been using.
All right. You have this group then that says, well, then we've got the processed food, which I think is kind of what you were alluding to, just grinding the grain a little bit so it becomes flour. That's in itself, to me, what would just be considered a processed food, not necessarily an ultra-processed food, which would be the bread that has that flour added to it, but then a whole bunch of other things as well.
Yeah, I could take corn, and I can take the corn and grind it up, and I can make it into corn flakes. I can stamp out corn flakes, and you can put it in your cereal bowl. And what have I done? I mean, it's processed very much. I might have added sugar and some vitamins and other things to it, but I haven't altered the proteins in it. They're still intact. The starch molecules are still pretty much intact. I can take that same corn, and I can enzymatically digest it into high fructose corn syrup, and now find the corn in there. That's a hyper-processed food.
Gotcha. All right. And one of the reasons that I wanted to talk to you today about this is when we spoke about this last year, you had what to me was a very novel definition of what also might be considered a processed food. I'd love to revisit that because you said something that really kind of blew our minds. You kind of want another food group to be considered processed. Which food group is that?
Yeah. Let's say I start with high fructose corn syrup as my model hyper processed food. How did it get that way? There are amylase enzymes that can take the corn starch and break it into sugar molecules. There's also amylase in the salivary gland of a chicken and in the chicken's pancreas. And so if you're feeding corn, not to your factory, but you're feeding corn to a chicken, as people do in factory farms everywhere, you're using pretty much the same kinds of things that the factory does to produce processed foods, but you're doing them biologically in an animal. I'm going to assert that virtually every animal product is a heavily, heavily processed food. Now, the Brazilian group that was trying to design a definition said, no. If it's meat, meat's unprocessed. You know, you slaughter the animal, you cook it and eat it. That's not processed. Stop. That animal was eating soybeans or corn that went through the animal's salivary gland enzymes and then down into the stomach where acids and then a variety of enzymes started just attacking the protein, turning the protein into amino acids, attacking the starch, turning it into sugar molecules, attacking the fat, turning it into different kinds of lipids, and going through the gut and pulling all the fiber out, ejecting that, turning the rest into either milk or eggs in the case of poultry, or meat that we sell. And we think of it as totally unprocessed. It is the most processed food you can imagine.
Well, then if we're going with your definition, I'm thinking that if the meat itself is processed and then it becomes something like sausage, then that could be perhaps the most processed food in the history of ever.
And we're going to need a new word for it because it is far more processed than anything that came out of a cereal factory or something like that. But you're absolutely right. When people have said, okay, red meat, is it associated with colon cancer? Yeah. But if I take it and I process it further, by smoking or addition of nitrites or curing of various kinds, does that even make it less healthy and even more strongly linked to, say, colorectal cancer? The answer is yes. Or diabetes, absolutely. But if I go to an organic food market and I get some free-range chicken and I'm picking that out, no antibiotics, you know, and so forth, is that associated with diabetes? Yes, it is. Epidemiologic studies show that yes, processed meats are the worst, like a hot dog, but regular unprocessed meats also increase the risk of diabetes, as does poultry, without any additional processing other than that which occurred in the animal's body to make that meat product.
All right. Let's see if you can kind of guess where I'm going to go with this. So let's say you have these meats, and these are, in fact, processed foods. How does the health risks that they carry compare to what are classically considered to be those processed or ultra-processed foods?
This is what has blown people away. If you take the I'm calling it the Brazilian definition of it, because these Brazilian researchers, they came up with a system called the NOVA system. It's not an acronym. NOVA just means new in Portuguese. And so they said, well, these highly processed foods are probably associated with diabetes and so forth. And it's true. As a group, if you take everything defined as a processed food, it's associated as a group with a higher risk of diabetes. Stop. Let's go back. Let's look at the foods individually. And in 2023, three huge cohorts at Harvard University, the nurses' studies and also the health professionals' follow-up study and nurses too, they pulled them all together. And they showed that indeed, processed animal products, processed meats, strongly associated with diabetes risk. Now, let's look at a processed breakfast cereal. Frankenberry, where it's been ground up and sugared and preservatives and ingredients you can't pronounce and all this kind of stuff, associated with strongly associated with reduced risk of developing diabetes.
Back that up. Are we seriously insinuating right now that the heavily processed cereal with the added dyes and the sugar and yes. just refined to death and refined some more after that is better for you than that whole chicken breast?
By far.
Wow.
By far. If the epidemiology holds. I mean, it's the best science we've got on this subject. But yes. In fact, if you look at it, it's amazing. Overall, if you just lump all processed foods together and you make a headline, processed foods are associated with diabetes, yes. And for many people, that's been, well, good enough for me. I'm not going to eat a breakfast cereal. Go back to the study and look at all the different foods that went into it. The breakfast cereals, including the ultra-processed ones, strongly associated with a preventive effect. Then, in this cohort, they found that sugary snacks, am I talking about Little Debbie's? I think so. Also associated with decreased risk. If you look at sodas, like a Coca-Cola or a Sprite or something like that, associated modestly with increased risk of diabetes. But here we had a huge problem because we thought, okay, this big sugary syrupy thing that's causing the diabetes. Right behind it is artificially sweetened soda associated with diabetes, almost exactly the same. Which led us to believe that it probably wasn't the sugar at all. It was probably the fact that sodas come with cheeseburgers. So we, anyway, if you look at the data, the animal-derived foods are much more strongly associated with the development of diabetes. The plant foods generally associated with protection. But this does not mean, I don't want people to think, great, bring on the donuts. No. I mean, we still want to have foods in as unprocessed a form as possible. Fruits. You didn't have to do anything to that fruit. You could just eat it. Same with vegetables and beans and whole grains and so forth. That's good. But if a person imagines that the reason they gained weight or got diabetes was because they were eating a bowl of Wheaties, I mean, that was not it. Mm. It's the bacon and the chicken and the fish and all these other things that deliver a huge load of fat to their bodies, more fat than you could deliver with in other ways. The fiber has been pulled out by the animal's body. The animal ate the fiber.
Right.
But then sequestered it off. And so you can't have it anymore.
Right. I would imagine the milk that they use on the cereal also could play a role here, especially if it's a whole milk, low fat, not given a pass, as you said on previous episodes, to skim milk or low fat milk, but certainly it could play a role.
I am going to indict both kinds of milk, whether it's low fat or high fat, because the low fat milk, high fat milk, what's the number one nutrient? Sugar. It's just a big bunch of sugary goo because milk came from a cow fed corn or silage or whatever the cow was fed, and it went through the cow's body and the cow manufactured milk out of it or manufactured meat out of it. And so you could just track those feed grains. It started out healthy. If we'd eaten the corn ourselves or the soybeans ourselves, we would have done well, but you feed them to the cow. The cow's enzymes and digestive system can turn it into a food that is far more processed than any factory can be. So I'm going to make a hierarchy. What are the bad kinds of processing? Okay, feeding foods to animals and eating what comes out. That's not good. Secondly, adding really unhealthy fats. So I'm making a donut. And the donut starts out as flour, innocent minding its own business. And then suddenly, what do we do? All that fat goes into the donut and all the sugar on top. So adding the fat is not good. Pulling the fiber out, that wasn't doing any favors either. So whole grain bread is better than white bread. What's good processing? Adding vitamins. Look at your breakfast cereals. On the label, they are adding folate, for example. They may add other vitamins as well, some little bit of B12. That's doing no harm,
right?
And doing a little bit of good. They may add preservatives so that it lasts longer on your shelf and doesn't go rancid. I'm going to argue that's a good thing as well.
I want to go back one more thing with the milk. Would you consider that under your definition of processed food? milk to be a processed food as well?
One of the most highly processed of all.
Yes. There it is. Okay. Let's go ahead and open up the doctor's mailbag. And if there's a question that you have for Dr. Barnard, post it in the comments or in the chat. I'm sure we'll get some about donuts in just a little bit. But let's see about who's got a good one. I feel like a lot of people are asking some good questions today, but I want to pick out a really good one. All right, Jeannie, this one seems to come up whenever we talk about processed foods. Are plant-based ultra-processed foods healthier than others in your estimation?
Are some plant foods better than other plant foods?
Yeah, the heavily processed ones. So I guess we're talking Beyond Burgers versus Larbar.
Well, all right. And that goes back to my hierarchy. When people made burgers out of feed grains, you know, you've got a lot of cholesterol and all kinds of problems in that beef burger. So when they made Impossible, Pat Brown and his team, or when they made Beyond Meats, they're trying to seduce meaty tastes by making something that tastes pretty similar to the meaty product. How do they get there? They start off with some innocent plant-based ingredients, but then they throw in a big glob of coconut fat. And that's processing that is not helping. It's not as bad as the meat it replaces. You know, the Impossible Burger and Beyond Meats, they are significantly better than an animal-based product, but they are not as good as they would be had they not added, say, the coconut fat.
What about these ultra-processed foods that have a ton of sodium in there, loaded with salt? Nancy's wondering about their effects there.
Yeah, sodium is every bit as bad as you thought it was.
Sorry.
Yeah, it really is. And you can add a ton of it. And it's the sad thing is you could get a can of green beans. And, you know, a bean growing out of the ground, it is not a high-sodium food. They added that to the factory just to make you buy it. And will it raise your blood pressure? Yes, it will. And sodium does a couple of other things too, unfortunately. Sodium tends to cause your body to lose calcium. At the kidney level, as the sodium is going through the little filter units, calcium gets kicked out. So yeah, it's you do need some sodium, but you don't need a lot. And the more you avoid the added sodium, the better off you're going to be.
You can find a lot of naturally occurring sodium in most foods too. I don't want to say a lot because it pales in comparison to what you get with, you know, if you go through a drive-thru or something like that.
Yeah. You will get the sodium you need.
Okay. Here's one. Let's see here. Somebody's wondering about what role do emulsifiers and stabilizers in ultra-processed foods play in our overall health?
By and large, I think they're neutral. There are foods that are designed to affect the texture of these foods. I think they're neutral. The big baddies are when you're running things through an animal's body, they create cholesterol, they add it. When you're adding fat, like coconut fat, it's bad. Another one I didn't mention earlier, but I should mention, Chuck, and that's that the cow's body, like all bodies, makes estrogens. And if you take that glass of milk, and you're looking, oh, it's got calcium, it's got protein, it's got some fat, it's got some sugar, it has estrogens in it too. And we used to think, well, the amount is so tiny, who, you know, how could it matter? We've got two new studies that show that the estrogens in milk are the likely reason why milk-drinking women have a higher risk of breast cancer.
Interesting.
So imagine a factory that took a cookie or a box of breakfast cereal and put estrogen sprinkles in them. You'd say, I'm not going to feed that to my kid. But that's what the dairy is. Every slice of cheese you ever ate has estrogens in it.
Mm. Wow. The pizza lovers are just like sobbing right now.
They should be. The dairy industry has tried to say, well, we have hormone-free milk or hormone-free cheese. And they've gone to the FDA and said, let us label our product hormone-free milk. And the FDA will say, well, what are you talking about? And they're saying, well, we didn't inject bovine somatotropin on our farm. We just milked the cows. And the FDA will say, the cow makes the hormones. The bovine somatotropin that you're injecting, yeah, that's a hormone. But the cow's been making hormones. And so it's in every glass of milk, whether you added it or not. So let me be clear. You bring your 8-year-old son to the dinner table. You pour a glass of milk. This has got to be good for you. You're feeding that kid estrogens. Mm. Your 7-year-old daughter, you're feeding her estrogens with every bowl of ice cream. So dairy consumption is consuming a highly, highly, highly processed food, processed by the cow who was fed feed grains and all these odd products came out.
Same goes for the grass-fed cows and, you know, all of those wonderful portraits that they paint with the slick marketing and things like that. Hormones are still going to be in that glass of milk, too.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, what is a grass-fed cow? A grass-fed cow is eating a green leafy vegetable. I mean, not the ones that we would eat. You know, we would eat broccoli or kale, and but they may eat grass or alfalfa or whatever it may be, or they may eat various legume products. And their enzymes, their a cow is the most amazing processing factory. In their mouth, the amylase enzymes start tearing apart the natural starches in those foods. And then the rumen is the first part of the stomach. You know, a cow has four compartments in the stomach. The first one is the rumen, and the food parks there for about 48 hours. And the microbiome starts fermenting it and changing the contents. And then it starts going on through the rest of the digestive tract. But it's a amazing factory that changes feed grains into processed food.
Factory. Processed. Interesting. I like your mind is so, it's very clever and it makes a lot of sense here. Let's grab a couple of more before we wrap things up. Let's see. Donna is wondering what steps somebody could take to reduce ultra-processed foods in their diet. I think it's easy for us to sit here and say, well, just stop eating them. Sure. But I mean, you know, a mom on the go, a dad on the go, you got kids, you got a busy day. It's just not that easy. A lot of times you're gravitating toward grab and go. So what is a practical first step or two that somebody could take here? Yeah.
What I like, I'm big on stocking up.
Yeah.
Things. So for example, it's Sunday afternoon and you go through the grocery store and you may not be particularly hungry. You're just shopping for dinner. Stop. Go through the produce aisle and pick up a couple of those nice apples that they have. Pick up a nice head of lettuce, pick up some potatoes and things, then you've got them. You got them at home. You weren't hungry for a cantaloupe right now or a watermelon, but pick it up. And if it's there, then that's what you're going to choose. And so, oh, you open up the refrigerator and there's the chunks of watermelon that I wasn't hungry for, but I picked them up, or the cantaloupe or the papaya or the mangoes. They're there. So pick them up. So produce aisle, lots of fruits, lots of vegetables, have them there. Cook some of them up so that when it's Monday dinner time, oh, last night I cooked up a whole bag of broccoli florets and it's already cooked and all I got to do is zap it and I got dinner. Fine. Walk down the bean aisle and pick up the beans either in cans or if they're dried. Either way, they cook in a second. And Chuck, I used to be allergic to this. I thought, oh, cooking beans from scratch, that'll take forever. Who has time? But then I realized, Chuck, they cook themselves. You don't have to supervise. You don't have to watch. You just soak them overnight. And you don't have to watch that either.
Yeah, man.
They'll soak themselves. And then the next day, cook them up for an hour, hour and a half, something like that. Do something else. When they're done. You can take your immersion blender and blend them down into what we would call refried beans, but they're not fried. Go down the grains aisle and pick up grains. That can be spaghetti. Yes, is it processed? I guess. I mean, you took semolina wheat and ground it up and cooked it, but it's minimal processing. And pick up grains that might be unfamiliar. You're familiar with white rice. Pick up brown rice. Pick up wild rice. Pick up all the different kinds. Pick up some quinoa if you've just heard it as a word, never tried it. Try those things out and you'll discover that you're eating whole foods just because they're there. You've got them in your kitchen now.
Use it or lose it, man. Yeah. All right. And want to wrap up with two big ones here. Number one, Sandra, what is the relationship between a heavily processed diet and someone's immune system? So if you're eating a lot of these ultra processed foods, are you going to be more susceptible to things?
I think so. And it's not that the processed foods cause it. It's the processed foods crowd out the things you need. Your immune system evolved along with real foods. So your immune system is borrowing antioxidants from nature. Your body is not making beta carotene and lycopene and anthocyanins and things. It's borrowing it from nature. And if you're not eating them because you're eating, you know, all these donuts and things like that, that's a big problem.
All right. And last one, John, can eating ultra processed foods regularly also shorten one's life expectancy?
Sure. Now I started off saying I don't want to indict the donuts so badly because the donuts were actually associated with less diabetes risk, but let's pick on the donut for the moment. How did you get the flour to become this greasy donut? By adding all this grease to it, that will raise your cholesterol level. That in turn is going to increase the risk of heart disease. It crowds out the healthy foods, the high fiber foods that you needed to prevent cancer. And the animal products themselves which are the most hyper-processed of all, they have the cholesterol, they have the bad fat, they have no fiber at all, they are vitamin poor, they skew your nutrition in the worst possible direction. A generation ago, people thought, well, you need animal products for health. You need dairy and you need meat. It turns out that a plant-based diet has more vitamins, more minerals. It's the most nutritious diet. You want a planet.
For sure.
To be as best as you can. But an animal-based diet is the most poorly balanced diet of all. And it is, yeah, like other processed foods, it's going to hurt your lifespan.
Wisdom, as always, my friend. Thank you so much for being here. Hey, you know, speaking of the places to be and being here, well, in March 7th, we're going to be down in Miami for your Bon Voyage bash. Yeah. That's going to be a lot of fun, huh?
It is going to be a blast, I have to say. I mean, frankly, it's just nice to be there. And everyone gets together and they're getting ready to go on the ship. But even some people who aren't going on the ship on the holistic holiday at sea get together for the Bon Voyage party. We're going to have a really nice time.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Count me as one of those that will not be setting sail, but will definitely be there to see everybody off in a fun way. So that's March 7th. You can get your tickets to the bash right now at pcrm.org/events. And also, right before the big soiree, Dr. Will Bulsiewicz and I are going to be doing, for the first time ever, a show live on stage in front of a studio audience, as it were. And you could be there too. So tickets for that will be on sale very, very, very soon. But definitely save that date right now, March 7th. In Miami, pcrm.org/events to get your tickets, or click that link right down there in the show description. And as always, Dr. Barnard, whenever you're here, got to give a tip of the cap to the Gregory J. Ryder Memorial Fund for their support of the Physicians Committee and all of the work that we do here. We could not do it without the support of Allison Mahoney and her crew.
Greg was such a wonderful person with such a warm heart, and Allison has carried that forward so beautifully.
Beautiful thing. And you can check out and learn more about the Gregory J. Ryder Memorial Fund for yourself right now at gregoryryderfund.org. That's Gregory Ryder, R-E-I-T-E-R, fund.org. And again, there is a link right below in the show description. Thanks for being here today, my friend.
Thank you, Chuck.
Every Wednesday, noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, that is when we do the Exam Room Live. That is your best opportunity to ask our experts, like Dr. Barnard, your health questions. So we are on Facebook, we are on YouTube, we are on my X page as well. We are everywhere, and there are links to all of our platforms down below in the show description, in the episode notes for you. So set a reminder, join us next Wednesday when Dr. Will Bulsiewicz makes a return to the show. His next house call, next Wednesday, noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific. So, are you ready for some football? Yes, indeed. It is the biggest weekend on the calendar for football. The Eagles are looking to stop the Chiefs. Great googly moogly. I mean the Chiefs, from scoring a historic three-peat, because a Kansas City victory would make them the first team in NFL history to ever win three championships in a row. But let's be honest here. The real winners this weekend are the owners of every National Football League team, because their broadcast partners and their pockets, those are the ones that will be lined with billions of dollars in what has become one of the biggest advertising days of the entire year. But those ads, flag on the play, are coming at a cost of your health, because a new study finds that a large volume of these ads that are shown during football games are for unhealthy food. Check this out. Researchers at St. Louis University, the Reno School of Medicine, and the University of Tennessee monitored the ads shown in 10 NFL games from September until November 2023, and they found that there were 102 food-related commercials that aired during that span, representing 10.8% of all ads that were shown. Now, here are the biggies. Among snack foods, the likes of Hershey's, Pillsbury, Reese's, Snickers, Tostitos, Lay's, and Doritos, they were the ones that were shown the most. And among fast food, or what the researchers here called quick service restaurants, the biggies are Burger King, Domino's, Jersey Mike's Subs, Little Caesars, Panera Bread, Subway, Wingstop, and Taco Bell. And with these restaurants, some of the meals that are being advertised exceeded the total daily sodium limit in a single sitting. Yeah, just one meal that was shown way more salt than you need for the entire day. Other meals topping out over 50 grams of fat, with two meals packing in a shocking 78 grams. Those coming from Little Caesars and Panera. And the latter is actually a little bit of a surprise, because you can certainly opt for healthier options at Panera. I'm not exactly sure what they were advertising, probably mac and cheese, that would be my guess anyway, with one of those big chocolate chip cookies that they sell as well. But either way, let me digress here. Here's what researchers concluded. I want to read to you verbatim from their study. They said, quote, "This cross-sectional study found that the foods advertised during NFL games, the most watched sporting events in the U.S., were frequently high in sodium, calorie, and fat content. Although the effectiveness of sports advertising and paid sponsorships on food consumption had been studied mostly among children and young adults, adults with prevalent conditions such as heart failure and coronary artery disease, hypertension, diabetes, and kidney failure may also be vulnerable to deviations from suggested or prescribed dietary restrictions based on the frequency of exposure to advertising." Now remember, we're talking about 1 in 10 advertisements. More than 1 out of every 10 are going to be for junk food. Furthermore, they say, quote, "Television watching is a sedentary activity, and since NFL games are televised 3 days of the week during the regular season, the combination of extended viewing times and poor dietary choices may be maladaptive for both primary and secondary prevention of multiple chronic cardiovascular and other conditions." No kidding. And the fact that the average NFL game is over 3 hours long, when you're doing the full regular season, sometimes they even have games starting at 9:30 in the morning, and then they run all the way up until close to midnight here on the East Coast. That is a full day of sitting and doing nothing. So that is a very valid point, and we have dropped a link for you to check out the study in the episode notes. That said, I absolutely love football. Quick little practical tip that I do, I make sure that all of my water, my healthy snacks, those things that I eat during the game, they are on a floor above me. So at least in between quarters and during commercial breaks, I'm going up and down the stairs to get something healthy to eat or just another glass of water to drink. And while it may be the more fun thing to rely on pizza and beer and things like that during the football games, the fact of the matter is, your body doesn't know what in the world you're watching. All your body knows is what you're putting into it. So you can have fun. Instead of chicken wings, make cauliflower wings. Right? Have a salad. Don't be afraid to have a salad. Instead of ordering Little Caesars, have a Caesar salad. Easy on the dressing, and hold the cheese. These are easy swaps that you can make. A fruit platter, not exactly the sexiest thing, again, for a football game, but you know what? Tastes pretty sweet. And at the end of the day, your health is the biggest victory in your life. Again, there's a link for you to check out the study in the episode notes. And one last thing before we wrap up today, if you could take a minute to head over to Apple Podcast or Spotify, wherever it is that you listen to your shows, please go ahead and give The Exam Room by the Physicians Committee a 5-star rating and leave a nice review. That is how we plant our seeds of growth here and help to make the world a healthier place. And make no mistake about it, we could not do that without your support. And for today, that is going to wrap things up. I want to say thank you one more time to Dr. Neil Barnard for being here as we continue to raise our health IQs. And for everyone at the Physicians Committee, I am the weight loss champion, Chuck Carroll. Thank you so very much for listening. And remember, as always, keep it plant-based.